Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church and America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Today in the news, we have a candidate, Republican candidate for Senate in Indiana. We'll be talking about him in a column criticizing him because he supports flogging, public flogging. His name is Greg Walker. And more power to him. We'll talk through that later in the program if we have a chance to get to it. I have a Christian curricula, homeschool, Christian school curricula. I don't even want to give the name of the publisher because it's a great publisher. But here they have a little story for kindergarten kids who are learning how to read about a mouse. And it's sort of like a little animal rights story that's not good to trap a mouse. And really, it's good for a mouse to eat grain. So anyway, we'll get to that. And what's with this animal rights attitude that permeates even many Christian circles? And we'll get to that. And then Tony Snow, as the new White House press secretary, he's coming out fighting, taking punches. And that's pretty interesting to watch. It's not going to change anything morally in our country, but it's like watching a boxing match or a hockey game. And then in Indonesia, Mount Merapi has erupted violently today. And we'll talk about the Muslims who live around the volcano. And they're not only Muslim and believe in Allah, but they also believe they're animists. They believe, for example, that the mountain is alive and that spirits control the mountain. So we'll talk through that. But first, I want to follow up on a call we had last week from an atheist that we knew of from this show 10 years ago, Forrest. And one of the accusations, he made a couple accusations on this program, and we're going to have Forrest back on in just a few minutes. But one of the accusations was about the dust on the moon and that Christians, and specifically me, Bob Enyart, were guilty of misusing the issue of dust on the moon as an argument for the young Earth. And I recounted for Forrest that NASA believed that there was a great risk that there would be billions of years of dust that had settled on the surface of the moon, and that would make it very difficult to land. So they had sent up missions, including the Surveyor mission, and to check and see how much dust was on the moon. And then eventually that worry was alleviated. And so they sent manned missions to the moon, and we found that there was very little dust on the moon. And I said during that discussion with Forrest, I said, you know, I have a friend, a retired computer engineer in Indiana, Bob Ball, and he's just a little bit older than me, and he remembers this stuff as when it was happening. And I wanted to call him during a commercial break, couldn't get to him. And now I've got Bob Ball on the line. Bob, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Thank you, Bob. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah, you sound great as always. Bob, you're a little bit older than I am?
Yes.
Okay. And you have some firsthand recollection of when these events were taking place. I was a kid. I was born in 59, so, you know, I was 5-6 years old when they were worrying about the amount of dust on the moon. Could you give us some of your firsthand recollection?
Okay, as best I can recall, it's been quite a few years.
Yeah.
I do remember staying up very late at night waiting for the astronauts to exit for the first time from the lander.
Mm-hmm.
And step down onto the moon. Prior to that, I was a big fan for many years of Isaac Asimov, the science writer.
Yeah, now he's passed away, but certainly he's one of the best known science writers of the last century.
And I do recall that he was one of the people that stated that because of the age of the moon being billions of years old, that it would probably have accumulated a thick layer of dust on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And he even made some funny remarks about perhaps as they came down on the surface of the moon, they would majestically settle in and disappear.
Right. Yes, majestically. And so that was obviously a big concern. Now, Forrest, on the show Friday, he called in and he mentioned a Dr. Thomas Gold, who's now passed away. He died back in 2004, I believe. But he said that he spoke personally with him, and he's an engineer who designed the feet of the lunar lander, and that was not a concern at all. They knew that by then they knew that the moon had virtually no dust on it, or very little dust.
Well, actually, I think Thomas Gold, if it's the same person that I'm thinking of, was an astronomer who in 1955 had worked out calculations that apparently agreed with what Isaac Asimov was saying later, that the dust layer would be thick.
Ah.
But this Thomas Gold later came over to the United States and I think did some work for NASA. I didn't recall that he was an engineer.
All right.
And I doubt if he actually designed the feet on the lander, but I do know that a few years before the surveyor, he did another study in which he apparently changed his mind and was then arguing for a thin layer of dust on the moon.
All right. And I looked up on Wikipedia, which is the internet free encyclopedia, and it's certainly an evolutionist type resource. And they have an article on NASA's surveyor program. And in that article, they write, before this project, it was unknown how deep the dust on the moon was. If the dust was too deep, then no astronaut could land. And so obviously this was a major concern NASA had, not only for landing, but then also if there were dozens of feet of dust or more, the dust cloud storm you might create just by attempting to land, that might mess up your engines when you try to take off. So there were all kinds of concerns NASA had about the dust on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. All right. Anything else, Bob, that you recall as far as this issue being a big issue that NASA worked through over a period of years?
Well, I wasn't aware of all the controversy at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But in reading about it in later years, there was still a controversy. But I think because of the landers and so forth, most of the people were convinced that there was not a thick layer of dust.
Very good. All right. Hey, thank you, Bob Ball. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
It's great to hear from you. God bless you. And tell your wife, Dorothy, that here at Bob and Yart Live, we said hello. Okay. All right. Bob's gone. All right, now I'm going to go to the phones again immediately because Forrest is back. Forrest, welcome back to Bob and Yart Live.
Thank you.
Forrest, were you able to hear that?
Yes, I did.
Okay. All right, so where do you want to go from there?
Well, I just want to say that you mislead. I don't know why you do this, Bob. I wish you would just be as honest as you possibly could be.
Forrest, you're going to have to...
I don't find that you are.
All right,
and
Forrest, I just put you on hold. And I just brought you back. Forrest, on the previous calls into the show, you make accusations, and then I ask you to substantiate them.
Mm-hmm.
And the strongest argument you came up with, two, one about the dust on the moon, and two, that I say atheists, that they hate God. And so you're going to have to substantiate your accusation. So you're saying I'm misrepresenting this issue now?
That's right.
Okay, substantiate.
When you had this on your program, and I have said this in the last program too, what you told your audience was that they designed the feet on the Eagle Lander so that they wouldn't sink into many feet of dust. And if you go back and look, which I don't think you'd bother, but that's all right anyway, that is what I said. That's what I said wasn't true. I said that Thomas Gold...
I recall you saying that, Farris. That's what you said. I agree.
Okay. And I also said that Thomas Gold was part of the team that designed the Eagle Lander.
Okay. All right. Good. Thanks for the clarification. Now, if you apparently think there's a great evil lurking in what you just described.
I think that what this proves, or part of what this proves, and I can give you untold numbers of examples of this, is that you leave out facts purposely to prove your cause.
Okay, well, let's talk about this example right here. Okay? Right here. When I said to you that there was a large concern at NASA that there was a lot of dust on the moon. Because of billions of years. When I said that, I went back and listened to that part of right at that point. You said, I don't believe that that's even a fact.
You said Neil Armstrong.
No, that was after.
That he was afraid.
That was afterward, Forrest. You're now probably just remembering incorrectly. But I put a correction on our website after Friday's show. No one called. I did this on my own.
Okay.
I thought through the Neil Armstrong comment I made, and I said, you know, that sounds like it might be a creationist urban myth. So I searched for evidence of that, and I could find just one somewhat veiled reference from a reputable creation source that Armstrong, at a conference, made a comment about the amount of dust on the moon, but it wasn't substantiated. So I put on our website, as we have a summary for every program, that I probably repeated an urban legend about Neil Armstrong and that I was retracting it. I don't know what his thought was when he went to the moon about the dust on the moon.
Well, okay. I'm glad that you said that publicly on the air. Did you change your views about Albert Einstein?
No, wait. Let's stick with this first.
Okay.
So now the accusation against creationists is that we created a fabricated argument for the young age of the Earth and the moon by the dust on the moon.
Not necessarily.
Well, okay, so...
I brought up the feet on the Eagle Lander. That's what you stated. You showed the gold foil.
All right, now let me
explain. Right? Did you show the picture of the gold foil on the feet?
Yes, on last Friday's show, I linked to that same picture.
Okay.
Or a similar picture. Okay. NASA, before the manned missions to the moon, starting in the late 60s, NASA spent a few years trying to figure out how much dust was on the moon. It was a big issue. It wasn't a minor issue. It wasn't a non-issue. It was a big issue.
Okay.
And I don't know what the engineering cycle was. How you don't design the feet of a lunar lander the day before you launch it. Usually those things have a few-year lag time. And it's my belief to this day that the feet of the lunar lander were especially wide. You could click on our website, go to kgov.com, click on the word feet, and you'll see a picture of the actual lunar lander on the moon. And it's my belief to this day that those feet were so oversized and broad because of the years of concern and investigation that if they landed on the moon, they may sink in the dust.
And I told you what the explanation Thomas Gold said.
Yeah, of course. He's one of the scientists who first fanned the flames of fear about too much dust on the moon, then, of course, 50 years later, he's going to spin it as though, hey, we knew right away it was no problem.
Well, we don't know that he said that. We just know that your friend said that he believes that he said that.
Yeah, Bob Ball.
At this point, it's believed.
Bob Ball told my call screener that is documented in an article. You could look up Thomas Gold on Answers in Genesis website, and you'll find that documented.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so anyway, so you seem to recall that. When I ask you to give examples of how I'm a hypocrite, you recall that story as a significant example. And as we tell it, I recall
as an example of you leaving out information or making claims.
What did I leave out of that story?
You left out information. You didn't do research enough to find out, you know, what actually the facts were.
That story that you and I just talked through and clarified is the story I've been telling on this show for 10 years. For 10 years.
Are you going to change it now?
No.
Are you? But you also, all right, let's talk about Albert Einstein. You said that he used to believe in God. Now you say that he doesn't.
Okay, you'll have to find the quote where I said Albert Einstein believed in God.
You used to say that he was quoted as using God in something that he had said.
Well, Einstein has some famous quotes about with the word God in it, like God doesn't play dice with the universe.
Right.
And Einstein was effectively an atheist. He believed in Spinoza's God, as
but
he
you
claimed.
Didn't you say that?
Well,
but
if I didn't say Einstein believed in Spinoza's God 15 years ago when we were on TV, it would be because I didn't know it or remember it at the time. But he was effectively an atheist who saw that the universe functioned in an uncanny way. Why would it function so well if it just had a random origin? And so Einstein says God doesn't play dice with the universe, meaning the laws of physics should make a lot of sense, although why do they make sense? And he couldn't answer that question, and today linguists have something they call Einstein's Gulf. When they talk about Einstein's concern about why should the laws of physics, atoms and molecules, give rise to the laws of logic. Logic is something that is not physical. Reason is not a physical thing. And Einstein was perplexed with this impassable gulf between the laws of physics and the laws of logic, and why should the laws of logic be reliable? But yet they seem to be. So you apparently think that back 15 years ago, Forrest, I knew Einstein was an atheist, and I was lying to the audience and saying he believed in God.
No, I don't think that. I think that you take misinformation, and if it benefits your cause, then you go ahead and use it without being accurate. Can I speak for a minute?
Yeah.
If you were to propose before you state things, I believe, before things that you claim as fact,
Forrest,
then it would
make
you more honest.
Forrest, if you were to say, I believe, before every sentence for the rest of your life, then I might take that counsel serious as coming from
or
you.
Or maybe you could at the beginning of your program.
We do it a different way. This is what we do. When we say something on the air and I find out it was an error, I correct it on the air and we correct it in print. In fact, our website, one of the few maybe in the world, we have on our homepage at the very top a link called errata. And that errata link, that's errors that have been corrected, that contains the most significant errors I've made on the year in 15 years that I'm aware of.
Such as speaking with Michael Reagan, and you made a quote. I read something like that. I can't think of the term. But what about...
Wait. You're just throwing out... Forrest, I said at the beginning of your call, you're going to have to substantiate...
Under errata, and it had something to do when you were speaking with Michael Reagan. I can't remember the details of it because I'm not at the computer right now.
I'm at our errata page, and there's nothing about, and there never has been anything about Michael. You might be referring to some other.
No, it was during that interview you corrected something that.
Oh,
you said.
Okay. That's not in our errata page because that's not a major error. That's a major error is something systematic that we repeat on the air over time, and it goes to our fundamental beliefs or philosophy.
Okay,
and so the correction, there was a correction recently. That's right. I had stated that John Kerry, when he announced that he was running for president.
Right. There you go.
That he gave his favorite verse as John 16:3 instead of John 3:16. And it turns out that was a widely cited false report, including by Paul Harvey and others on the radio. And actually, it was George Bush Sr. who misrepresented his favorite verse as John 16:3. So I made an error and we corrected it there.
Okay. Now, can I say some things about myself?
Sure.
All right. I have told you before that I used to be a born-again Christian, which born-again Christians don't believe that that's possible, but I'm telling my personal story and nobody walks in my shoes, so they don't know. And there are some things that I agree with you on, such as the $9 trillion debt, and I think that it's a good idea to take DNA samples of everybody. I think those are good ideas. When I was in high school and in elementary school, I used to look at problems in the world, and I used to say, why don't people do things to correct these issues and these problems? And I don't think you're that much older than me, but when we were in school, there were big concerns over nuclear war. And I think we can't solve the problems by not looking at ourselves and saying, maybe some of my basic beliefs could be wrong.
Forrest, of course we need to do that.
And so
if we're not willing to challenge what we believe, we probably don't have a strong faith in what we believe.
There are critical things that are happening on the earth, which I don't think that you really care about looking at or finding out.
Well, there's another broad
overpopulation
Forrest, there's another broad accusation
global
that you have
warming
to,
and overpopulation.
Okay, so you have to substantiate. So, okay, you mentioned overpopulation first.
I mean, did you study about the polar bears being starved and how they're coming back 20 pounds lighter?
I missed that one. But okay, you mentioned overpopulation first, so you've accused me of not caring about overpopulation.
Well, George Bush, the current president, believed, as you did, that you can take all the people in the world and put them in a park, which may be true. But that doesn't explain all the food that needs to be grown. And besides that, the greed that people have needing big homes and fancy cars and things of that nature.
All right. Now, I don't know about what George Bush said about putting everybody in Rocky Mountain National Park.
You said that.
But I did the calculations myself. I took the population of the world and the acres in Texas, and I pointed out that everyone in the world could have a home, they could have their own home, their own yard, and everyone could live in Texas, and we could use the entire rest of the globe for agriculture, food production, and vacationing.
Do you think that's logical?
No, of course it's not logical, but it gives people a mental image of how many people are in the world, and you could put them all in Rocky Mountain National Park, which is a little dot on the globe. It's a little spot on the map of Colorado.
Well, now people that have gone with your thought process and now are leading the country have opportunities to go to India and China and other places in Africa, and they see that overpopulation is indeed a problem.
Well, that's
in
your
their belief,
Forrest. That's your assertion.
But and I wish you would go and do research,
Forrest,
and figure that out.
If I went
too.
To China, we went to Turkey 2 years ago. We're going to Greece on Thursday.
Right.
I've been to New Zealand, the Middle East, four times. Another trip is not going to convince me that the numbers are wrong.
But you could.
So, have you gone to China?
Research.
I have. Have you gone to China?
No, I haven't been out of this country.
All right. So neither of us have firsthand experience of looking at a million Chinese people.
But what I'm saying
in a square.
Is that, can I speak for another minute?
Sure.
What I'm saying is that all of these scientists, all of these people, who this is their livelihood to go around and to do research, and they're not trying to disprove the Bible. They're just trying to get information and do research.
Do they have an agenda?
They do not.
How do you know that?
Well, not like yours.
How
I mean,
do you
it's
know
not
that?
Like you're trying
Forrest,
to prove everything for your...
Forrest, it's naive for you to say any particular group of scientists don't have an agenda. That's naive. You should take it back.
Okay. I will say that they have an agenda to find out what is really happening.
Okay,
and
so
I don't think that you have that agenda. I think your agenda is to try to find any proof to...
That's an accusation that you need to substantiate, and we're doing it with overpopulation. So what you need to do to follow this logically is you need to show the audience how I'm being unreasonable on my position about overpopulation not being the problem the world is facing.
Will you be willing to let me come back next week and bring information on that?
Oh, if you'd like
to.
Why don't we do it in 3 weeks? I'll be in Greece.
All right, that sounds fine.
That'll give you more time.
Can I also mention, you know, you had talked to Dr. Henderson about Eve, the story of Adam and Eve, and how Eve, her gestation period was extended to 9 months.
Right.
I mean, Bob, to me, that makes no sense. I mean, you could also say that her opening was...
Okay, all right, Forrest, when you come back on in 3 weeks, then what we'll do is we'll keep it to overpopulation so we don't go all over the place.
Well, there's one more thing that we have talked about last week that I want to bring it up again.
Well, wait, you mentioned
leaving information.
Wait,
out.
You mentioned Eve. You mentioned Eve.
Right.
And the story in Genesis tells us that God wanted Eve to have many children, but because of her sin, that's why she would have pain in childbirth. And there's a Hebrew idiom, a figure of speech used in that passage right there, where God says, I will multiply your conception. I don't know if you noticed that. Multiply her conception so that she will have pain. Does what that mean? It doesn't mean she would have more kids, because God made her to have many, many, many kids.
How do you know that?
Because
God,
no, we know that because in Genesis, God told Adam and Eve,
be fruitful and multiply,
okay. And he put tens of thousands of eggs in her ovaries, and those eggs would have lasted her indefinitely had
she not
sinned.
How do you know he put tens of thousands of eggs in her ovaries?
Because women have, women, human beings, have tens of thousands of eggs in their ovaries, if not more. Yeah, if not more. And so anyway, when God said, I will multiply your conception. Conception is a figure of speech for gestation. God multiplied the period that the baby would be developing in the womb so that that baby would come out large and would bring about pain in delivery. And that was merciful to Eve so that her children would not now die in this hostile environment.
And you don't claim to be putting any conjecture in that statement whatsoever.
No, the only thing you have to do is recognize that when God says, I will multiply your conception, that that's a figure of speech for the gestation.
Well, my statement is that you just made that up.
Well, no, I actually didn't. I've been teaching on figures of speech in the Bible for the last 15 years. So if I made
from a figure of speech,
Forrest,
claim that that's what that means,
Forrest,
your own interpretation.
It's a common figure of speech to use a word for the beginning of something and use it for the entire thing. Like, how many titles did an author write? It doesn't mean he just wrote titles. It means he wrote entire books. So when God says, I will multiply your conception, that's a figure of speech for the baby developing in your womb. I will multiply it by 1.5 instead of 6 months, and the baby comes out tiny. It's now 9 months. 9 is the number of judgment in the Bible. 6 is the number of man. And that baby comes out larger, brings pain, but it's merciful to the mother and the child.
Well, I disagree with you on that.
Well, you don't believe in the Bible, Forrest. You don't believe in the Bible.
I don't believe that you know what you're doing.
All right, we're out of time. There's another accusation. Hey, Forrest?
Yes, I'm here. All I'm asking is that all I want is that you just bring more of the picture to light. People.
I think that's great. And to the extent you try to hold my feet to the fire, I love it.
Okay.
I'm all for it. Okay. So, Forrest, I really look forward to it. I'll be looking for your call in about 3 weeks.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. So that was Forrest the Atheist, and that will be an interesting show, a debate on overpopulation. And right now, we'll take a break. And if you're in Iowa, call us, 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278.
And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278. Bob Enyard here. Well, that was interesting, and I actually appreciate it very much so. Of course I do. You would too out there, right, in the audience. If there's an unbeliever and he says, hey, I think something you said was not correct, I want to challenge that, that's great. The Bible says be ready to give an answer to those who ask. And when you do a talk show for 15 years, that's 250 programs a year, so 1,000 shows every 4 years. So this is going on 4,000 shows. And you cover a lot of issues. And of course, nobody could remember the details of all those issues, but they should be, the things we cover here on Bob Enyard Live should be consistent with a Christian worldview, and they should be consistent with reality. So if the Bible is the Word of God, then its teachings should be consistent with the reality that we experience and that we observe in outer space, in our solar system, our galaxy, the universe, and it should be consistent with the history that we have recorded in our experience as a human race. So it's fascinating to look out, to look inward, to look around us, and to see that the Bible is the Word of God, and it's because of that that it has this uncanny accuracy in describing our existence. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278 in Goshen, Indiana. Daryl, welcome to Bob Enyard Live.
Hi, Bob. I sent you an email over the weekend and just wanted to talk about it. It's about this moon dust issue.
All right, go right ahead.
Well, I looked it up and, you know, just basically did a Google search.
Yeah.
And found information on NASA's own website.
All right.
And in their history section. And it specifically states that the greatest uncertainty in the program at the time, pointed up by all these early studies, was the physical nature of the moon's surface.
Wow, I wish I would have saw that email, Daryl.
Now, yeah, I just sent it to you again just now before I did this.
All right, that's great. I make an effort to read our emails. I can't get to them all, but our staff goes through every email and they highlight, you know, some that I've missed to make sure that I see them. But let's see, I'm looking. You said you just sent it, huh?
Yeah, it's about Depth of the Moon Dust is what I entitled it.
Depth of the Moon Dust. Okay,
and did you send it?
Did you send it to enyartbob@aol?
Yes.
.com? All right, for some reason I don't see it. Okay.
Specifically, it says Cornell University astronomer Thomas Gold asserted, however, that the apparently smooth areas on the sun were likely to be covered with a layer of fine dust several meters thick.
You mean on the moon? You mean on the moon?
Right.
You said on the sun.
I'm sorry.
That's
the moon were likely to be covered with a layer of fine dust several meters thick.
All right.
Raising the prospect that the lunar module might sink out of sight with only a short-lived dust cloud to mark its disappearance.
Raising the prospect that the lunar... I just found your email from yesterday. I found that one. And I went to... I'm at a NASA webpage now, nasa.gov, Operational Constraints on Landing Sites. All right. And so you were just quoting from this article?
Right. It's several paragraphs down.
I see it. Okay. All right. Now, let's see. Gerald Kuiper of the University of Arizona, one of the principal investigators in the Ranger Project, was convinced that the surface was firm, though it might be unconsolidated and might be covered in a thin layer of dust. Cornell University astronomer Thomas Gold asserted, however, that the apparently smooth areas on the moon were likely to be covered with a layer of fine dust several meters thick. That would mean 10 feet, say, or more. Several could be more. Raising the prospect that the lunar module might sink out of sight with only a short-lived dust cloud to mark its disappearance. And that's what our caller, Bob Ball, said he remembers Isaac Asimov had predicted. So very good. All right. So, NASA admits this issue. And, Daryl, the way it falls out with atheists and others who accuse us creationists, they accuse us basically of fabricating an argument for a young Earth. And really, it was the old Earth evolutionist type at NASA and elsewhere that were concerned that they believed the moon was billions of years old, and with dust settling on it for billions of years, the dust might be tens of feet or 100 feet thick, and that any spaceship might get covered, just sucked into the dust. So very good. I'm going to link to that on the summary of today's show.
Great.
That's super. Anything else, Daryl?
That's it.
All right. Appreciate your call. God bless you, sir.
Goodbye.
And Daryl was just listening to Forrest on the program, and yet we're not on the air in Indiana. So how did that happen? Oh, he listened to the live streaming at kgov.com. You could go to kgov.com and listen to the program live streaming. Actually, we pass you right off, for example, to the Faith and Freedom Network, because they stream this program. So we pass you off there, and we pass you off to the station in Denver, Colorado that we're on. It's a Crawford Broadcasting Station, a 50,000-watt AM 670 KLTT. So if somebody wants to listen to the radio show and they can't pick it up live, then they just go online and listen to the live streaming. Or if you miss a show, just go to our website, kgov.com, and you could enjoy the show you missed, or we archive all of our programs indefinitely. So I don't want to say forever, because this world will eventually burn with a fervent heat. But we archive them indefinitely, so people who find out about Bob and Yart Live, they get excited about a biblically-based talk show that analyzes the issues of the day, and the goal of our program is not just to lament the problems, but to identify the solutions, and how should we as Christians live in our culture? What kind of family should we have? What kind of husband should we be? How should our churches function? So it's a lot of fun. People find the show, and then they go to KGOV, our website, kgov.com, and they click on archives, and they find out that there is a treasure trove of past programs. And we hear from people all the time. It's really neat. People say, Bob, we found the show and we started listening through the archives. We're up to 2 years ago. It's really interesting. They actually relive episodes, things that we've gone through, like when we burned O.J. Simpson's memorabilia. We bought at auction his Hall of Fame award, his jerseys, when we went out to Hollywood and purchased them. And then the next day at noon, they're being auctioned. It seemed like all the media in the world were there. And we bought a lot of this stuff, what, $15,000 worth? And we announced that we're going to burn all these O.J. Simpson memorabilia on the steps of the L.A. courthouse the next day at high noon. And boy, did the media come out. It was quite a dramatic event. And that's what we used to launch our website, KGOV, KGOV.com. And, of course, KGOV works. We have a sister website, theologyonline.com. The two work together. And between those two websites, we've carved out a significant influence on the Internet on all kinds of different issues. Theological debates, debates with atheists, issues about crime and the Bible and God and the death penalty. So for those of you who listen to the show for some time, you'll know this, but a new listener, I'll let you know. For example, if somebody is wondering, what does God say about the death penalty? And so they search on the internet, God, death penalty, they just put those three words, or they put God and the death penalty, however they do it, you get millions of hits, pages that have those words on them. And the top 100 pages normally are the most relevant. And the number two, out of all those millions of pages that Google will find for God and the death penalty, the number two page is an article written by Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. And he talks about our criminal justice system and God. And, you know, he's a legal positivist, so he believes that the law should have nothing to do with morality, justice, with God, with right and wrong. The law is simply a fabrication of mankind. It's ultimate humanism. Whatever humans come up with as the law, that's what the law is. And it's his job simply to rubber stamp the law. So anyway, his article is number two. And our article, the one we wrote about that topic here at Bob and Yart Live, is number one and has been number one for years on the topic of God and the death penalty. So it's pretty neat. So you could check that out. All right. Now, what else do we have in the news here that I mentioned at the beginning of the show we wanted to talk about? We have a column in the Indianapolis Star newspaper. That's the biggest paper in Indiana, right? Wednesday, May 10th, so 5 days ago. And this columnist, Matthew Tully, he doesn't like the fact that a Republican Senate candidate, Greg Walker, supports public flogging. And he says he calls it the brutal practice of flogging. And I don't know why that would be brutal. Why is it brutal? You flog somebody who's committed a crime. Let's say they've assaulted someone, or they've done something like drunken driving, or they got mad at a girlfriend and they hit her. And maybe they've done that two or three times. And so what our system does is send the person to jail. That's pretty much the only real punishment we have, and pay a fine to the system, which is a conflict of interest. But our system isn't very good at deterrence. And so people, in fact, oftentimes the recidivism rate is horrendous. People go to jail, they come out, they do the same thing. They don't all get caught, but many of them do, and they go back to jail. And when they are in jail, they tend to get worse. But if a man hits a woman, well, that's a cowardly kind of a man. And so if the punishment was he would be flogged, then he'd care more about his skin and that kind of pain than he would about going to jail for 3 months or 6 months. And so it would have the ability to deter his behavior and change his behavior. But the husband of a wife and two kids, he commits some crime, some stupid crime, that he realizes it was wrong and he's a fool and he's in our court system. So his punishment is 4 months in jail. So he goes to jail, which means for 4 months, he's going to be watching TV, probably 12 hours a day, playing cards, gambling over checkers or chess, betting soups. You know, you buy those soups. What do they call those cheap soups? Dried soups. I forget what you call them. Used to be able to get 10 for a dollar in jail. And they'd bet these soup, ramen noodles. They'd bet. I've been 6 months in jail. And so the inmates would bet, you know, they'd up you. You bet a ramen noodle, I'll see your ramen noodle and up your ramen noodle. So now you got a lot on the line. So they gamble, they play basketball, foosball in one of the jails I was in, Boulder, Colorado, and softball, basketball, handball, whatever. And so that's what he's going to be doing for 4 months while she is desperately trying to keep their family together and their head above water, not losing their home or even their apartment. And here she is without her husband to go to work and take home a paycheck, and she is trying to survive. And that is cruel punishment to her. And how many, you have to count it in the tens of thousands, right? Families that have lost their homes and kids have been put through utter turmoil because their idiot father who committed some crime is now in our broken criminal justice system. Instead of actually being swiftly punished, he's sent on a vacation or a retreat for 3 months. or 6 months or 10 months. And his wife is desperately trying to keep the family together and the family falls apart. And instead, if some idiot husband assaults a woman or whatever crime similar to that, and instead of him getting a vacation for 3 months or 4 months, he's flogged, and that flogging is over in about 3 minutes. And yeah, he might have to recover. But then Monday morning, he's back at work, and he's actually sorry. And this is going to deter him because he doesn't want to go through that again. Then how is that cruel? How is that brutal? Locking human beings up like animals is cruel. God has not authorized us to lock human beings up as a form of punishment. God has not done that. Liberals, if you have animals in a pen, you have cattle grazing in a meadow with a fence around it, the liberals, the animal rights nutcases, they complain. They complain. I remember when two of our boys, Josiah and Nathaniel, were probably 8 and 10 years old. We were up in the mountains, the Rocky Mountains, walking and came across the meadow. And we were sitting at an old split rail fence, looking at the cattle, eating our lunch. And I asked our boys, Josiah and Nathaniel, ages 8 and 10, I said, boys, what would that cow over there think if we knocked down this fence and freed him, gave him his freedom? And Josiah, who was 10, looked at the cow, he looked at the fence, and he said, nothing. That was a good answer. What would the cow think if we freed him? Nothing. He wouldn't think anything. He just wants to eat. That's pretty much all he wants to do is eat, drink. That's about it. A cow is a reservoir for food. That's what a cow is. So at any rate, liberals who are against housing animals support housing human beings, even though that is the cruel and inhuman punishment. And God only authorized us to keep prisoners incarcerated during a trial. For a serious trial where someone could pay a serious corporal punishment or capital punishment if they're convicted, then you incarcerate the person during the trial. And after the trial, if the suspect is found guilty, you inflict a swift punishment. And then that's it. It's over. All right, so this Matthew Tully, the columnist for the Indianapolis Star, he writes about this Republican candidate for Senate, Greg Walker. And Greg Walker is the one who supports public flogging. You know, Bob and Yurt Live was on TV 5 nights a week for 4 years in Indianapolis. Is that right? Yeah, I think that's right. And so this year, Greg Walker, the columnist, met with him. They met at a local restaurant. And the columnist says that in 2003, Greg Walker, the Senate candidate, by the way, he wanted the seat of the president of the Senate, the longtime president of the Senate in Indiana. And so Greg Walker campaigned against that guy in the primary, and he won. So he ousted the Senate president, and now he's the candidate for senator in that district. And so this Greg Walker wrote a letter to the editor in 2003, urging Indiana to adopt flogging. That's pretty cool. And so the columnist is talking to this candidate, and the columnist writes, while saying anti-abortion legislation would be his top concern as a senator, Greg Walker defended flogging as a biblically based punishment. Oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And Greg Walker said, it's part of the inspired word of God, so I know it works. And he said, if that makes me a radical, then so be it. I'll accept the label, but I don't think it's a radical position. a vast majority of Americans, when polled, support flogging. And there were two totally separate stories done by curators of museums of old prisons in America. One story was from the East Coast. The other was from Colorado Springs. And an editor at the Rocky Mountain News copied both stories, run on different days, totally unrelated. And he sent them to me. This is over 10 years ago. And he said, Bob, this is so interesting. Both curators at two different prison museums said the same thing in these two different articles. Here's what they said. That in the prison museums, they have a room where they show how they used to flog criminals with how they would lash their arms and hold them in place and then the whips they'd use to whip their back. And the curator said the reason we have these rooms is so people would see how terrible it was, so they'd be against it. But somehow it doesn't work because everybody comes through and they say, boy, we should do that again. So both articles had the same observation by curators 2,000 miles apart. And, of course, it's true. But you know what? That doesn't mean much because majority opinion doesn't tell you what the truth is. The majority is often wrong. Often wrong. Right? In Germany, there were places in Germany where the majority supported either Hitler, the Nazis, the socialists, or the Marxists, the communists. Either the Nazis, the National Socialists, or the Marxist communists. So the majority, it doesn't mean the majority's right. But it just so happens that when liberals who worship the voice of the people come across the issue of flogging, they're on the wrong side of their deity there, their humanist deity, because people see the common sense in flogging. It's inexpensive, it's quick, and it's effective. Because cowards who beat up on women, they beat up on women because they're cowards. And if they're going to have a man flogging them as their punishment, instead of having them play softball and basketball for 4 months, but they're going to be flogged, then those men are going to hesitate to hit another woman. Whereas liberals, and even liberal Christians, are willing to sacrifice, what, 100,000 women a year on the altar of being nice to the criminal and allow women to be brutalized and even raped and murdered because we're going to be nice to the criminal and we hope that being nice to him changes him. We hope it reforms him. But guess what? It doesn't work. I want to thank you for tuning in to Bob and Yurt Live. It's been a lot of fun, especially having Forrest on and Bob Ball and then Daryl from Indiana. And we're looking forward to tomorrow's show. So feel free to tune in or check out our website at KGOV.com.